नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 20 टेक्स्ट्स 1 एंड 2 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय ऋषि भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी वंदना आचार्य स्वामी मैत्रेय उवाच भगवान अति वैकुंठ साकं भगवता विभु न्यज्ञाय यज्ञ प्रतिष्ठो यज्ञ भूतम् अभाषत. The great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, being very much satisfied by the performance of 99 horse sacrifices, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, appeared on the scene. Accompanying him was King Indra. Lord Vishnu then began to speak." Text 2. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Esha Te Kashi Dhangam Ayameda Shatasyaha Shamapayata Atmanam Amushyam Shantum Arhasi. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, "My dear King Prithu, Indra, the King of Heaven, has disturbed your execution of 100 sacrifices. Now he has come with me to be forgiven by you. Therefore, excuse me." But in this verse, the word Atmanam is very significant. It is a custom among yogis and jnanis to address one another, or even an ordinary man, as oneself. For a transcendentalist never accepts a living being to be the body. Since the individual self is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the self and the super self are qualitatively non-different. As the next verse will explain, the body is only a superficial covering, and consequently an advanced transcendentalist will not make a distinction between one, the self, and another. Now this is the situation. Maharaj Prithu, who is a Kshatriya-vesh avatar and empowered incarnation of the Lord in the matter of ruling the earth, has performed 99 horse sacrifices, and he's in the course of performing the 100th. When someone came to disturb him, that person is known as Shatakratu. Shatakratu means who has performed 100 horse sacrifices, and that person is not Indra, because by performing 100 horse sacrifices, one can attain the position of Indra. So having done that, he didn't want King Prithu to do the same thing and thus threaten his position. And therefore he disturbed the whole sacrifice, or rather made it impossible to perform by stealing the horse. You can't sacrifice a horse if there's no horse to sacrifice. So you could say, well, get another horse, but only a particularly suitable horse with various distinctive marks qualifications, as mentioned in Shastra, is suitable for offering a sacrifice. So there's a whole story about the son of Prithu arrested King Indra several times, and Indra, because of his position, his respectable position, was excused. And now Lord Vishnu is appearing with King Indra and asking for him to be excused. Although actually this isn't the right way to do it. It's not right to do something wrong with the idea of thinking that, well, afterwards I'll then excuse. Although sometimes it is said that it's easier to be forgiven than to get permission. And you have that same kind of other things. That it's easy. If you want to do something, then rather than going through the process of getting permission, it's easier just to do it. And then people will complain, and you say sorry, and it's done, and you're forgiven, and you didn't have to take permission. So, it's out of that way. So, Indra's done the same thing. And he does this in the heart only once, but quite often also in the matter of killing Vritrasura. He was reluctant to kill him, even though he was a very disturbing demon. Actually, he was a great devotee, but he took him in the form of a demon, not a person, not a Bhagavata. So he was afraid to kill him because he was the son of Toshta, great Brahmin sage. And be subject to the sin of killing a Brahmin. But the devil didn't say, just don't worry, we'll do some sacrifice. And we'll get, you kill him, and then afterwards we'll do something to arrange to get free from the sin. But actually, it doesn't really work properly like that. In this case, it's working because God Vishnu is personally interceding on behalf of Indra. It's a very interesting position because Indra is, for all the different things we read about him, all the difficulties he gets into, he's actually an important representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he shares this, some of the same names as Lord Vishnu does. Suresh, common name in India, isn't it? Very common name. What does that mean?
Sura plus East.
Yeah, it means the Lord of the demigods, Lord of the demons, or Suresh. So who does that refer to? It refers to Indra, but it also refers to Lord Vishnu. You'll find that name. Arjuna refers to Krishna as Suresh in Bhagavad Gita. Then there's that, what is that verse? Lakshmi Ram. How is that? And not any verse. Well known person.
Yeah.
Shanta.
Yeah.
How is it dog? Suresh. So, who is this referring to here?
Vishnu.
Lord Vishnu.
Oh, Krishna.
So, Bhujanga Shayana, that's not Indra. Bhujanga Shayana means? Who is here? Bhujanga means snake, and then Shayana means who is resting on the snake, so that's the Vishnu. So, they have a name in common, Suresh. So, Indra is it means Lord Vishnu, he's inclined towards the devas. Although he's neutral in one sense, in another sense, he's inclined towards the devas. Because the devas, even though they may be they're devotees, but they are sakam lotus, they're devotees with material desires. But nevertheless, they're devotees, which is better than demons, and they also are, even though they may not be pure devotees, they help to maintain order within the universe by which Lord Vishnu can be worshipped, the outer of the Vanashram system. So King Indra is very important because he's the king of the demigods. In this sense, he represents Lord Vishnu. So, Lord Vishnu is, he has to uphold the position of Indra. And have to, but he does so because he wants to maintain all within the universe so that people can gradually become advanced in Krishna consciousness, or to even come to the path of Krishna consciousness. Now, here we see Prithu Maharaj. He is actually, in one sense, more than King Indra, because he's a Kshatriya Vaishyavata. He's empowered by the Lord to act on his behalf, as is Indra also. But particularly Prithu Maharaj is mentioned as a Shakti Vaishyavata with the particular Shakti or potency, Palan Shakti, of maintaining or ruling. So he's also a great devotee, probably more so than Indra. So Lord Vishnu, he has to intercede. They're quarreling, not exactly quarreling, but Prithu has no quarrel with Indra, but Indra has created a situation in which he's harassing Prithu Maharaj in his activity of performing sacrifices, which actually he was performing not to attain the position of Indra, but for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. So, but Indra has thwarted his attempt on Yamadhar. So now Lord Vishnu is interceding, otherwise more and more disturbance. Ritu and his sons, they are capable, they are so powerful, they are capable of chastising Indra. But that will cause a disturbance in the cosmic setup. So they're both devotees, and even though actually Prithu Maharaj had no fault, and actually there is a fault on the part of Indra, but Lord Vishnu is interceding and saying, please forgive him. He's asking Prithu Maharaj to forgive Indra. So, why should he do that? Because Indra is in the wrong, and Prithu is even more of a devotee. Because Indra has a certain position with which he has to discharge his service to the Lord, and it's nowadays we have all this management theory and business administration, all the commons and all this. One of the basic principles of business administration is that a leader has to support his subordinates who are also in leadership role. In other words, just like here we see Lord Vishnu, he is the Lord of the whole universe. And Indra is the king of the demigods, which is a very important position within the universe. So Indra has done something which is not properly correct, but Lord Vishnu is supporting him, because not exactly supporting him, he's saying he did something, he's smoothing over the situation and preaching to both parties and making friendship like this. They're both very good personalities. But Lord Vishnu, in doing so, doesn't undermine Indra's position. He doesn't come in and say, this guy's completely in Maya, he's completely useless, who does he think he is? Because if he was to do so, then Indra could no longer discharge his service to Lord Vishnu, because if the fact that he's been given that position means that he has won the confidence of Lord Vishnu. He's won the confidence of Lord Vishnu, and now he's not properly discharged his duty. But nevertheless, Lord Vishnu wants to keep him in that position. So if he's going to keep in that position, you can rule. Ruling means you have to rule with some forces there or authorities there, but it also requires the cooperation of the subjects. That no one, it's possible to rule only by force, without the love of the subjects. It's possible. But it's not a very pleasing kind of administration. And then maybe just like Stalin or someone, he could rule by force only. Although some people liked him also. And was a didn't get killed. So it's possible to rule by force only. But that is ruling in the mode of ignorance. That is Rakshasa kind of ruling. Lord Vishnu, he's the overseer of the mode of goodness. So although some force is required in any administrative system, that the administration of the universe is being run on for the sake of increasing Krishna consciousness, which means the love of all living beings for Lord Vishnu. In other words, even though Lord Vishnu is all powerful, he doesn't rule for the sake of exploiting others, but he rules for the sake of uplifting others. Not for the sake of crushing them, but for the sake of seeing that all are engaged in their respective positions in Krishna consciousness. So, he's not interested in ruling by, although some forces require, but he's not interested that even his subordinate leaders, such as Indra, rule by force alone. But leadership, one has to capture the respect of the followers. And unless the followers respect one, then they may, as a matter of duty or obligation, they may follow the leader, but it will be with half-hearted and moaning and groaning and carping and conniving and not very happy. And the administration won't go on running us, just like they may have a work to rule. And I think the labor laws have changed since the time of Mrs. Thatcher, but I remember when I was a kid, there were so much problems in the labor unions in England that were spoiling all the industry. And actually a lot of the industry is spoiled, just like Britain was. Britain used to be famous for shipbuilding, but the shipbuilding industry is completely finished. There are no ships built anymore. Hare Krishna, Jai Jagannath. So they used to have strikes and work to rule. They used to have a policy called work to rule, which is in which they would work only, for instance, if someone was paid to paint a ship, that's all he would do. If he wouldn't, that was his contract, to paint the ship. So he would paint it, but he would say that I am not paid to bring the paint from the store. And so no one would bring the paint from the store, and he wouldn't paint. And I am not paid to take the lid off the paint. I'm only paid to paint. You see? So in this way, they were not, they were doing their job supposedly, but actually not really cooperating, causing unnecessary disturbance. And it's understood that if you're paid to paint, that you have to go and get the paint from the store and take the lid off and put the brush in and then paint. So you may say, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm ready to do my job. But if ruling is only by rules alone, then nothing actually gets done. Because ruling means one has to capture the respect or the cooperation of the followers, and then everyone does what is, just like Prabhupada used to say, do the needful, whatever is required for spreading Krishna consciousness. Not that at every moment you have to be told, do this, do that, and then say, no, I don't have to do that because I'm only paid to paint and I'm not paid to take the lid off the paint can. So leadership is a very great Prabhupada. He mentioned in one of his purports about what is that? That in this modern age, that the leaders, they are castigated by the very people who they are trying to help. Of course, nowadays leaders, they're mostly not trying to help anyone except themselves and maybe their immediate family, and that's nakedly obvious in countries like India and many countries. The leaders are completely corrupt. And in these countries, England and America, it works the same way, but it's more sophisticated. It's a more sophisticated, people are a little bit more intelligent here. So a little bit more intelligent means a little more sophisticated. So they work for their self-interest in a roundabout way. Just like there was this American election, and they weren't, there was this, all this counting the votes and this and that, and they weren't actually, both sides were not actually trying to see fairly who was got the most votes, but they were manipulating in different ways to try, just to see how I can get the position. So they weren't actually thinking, what is the will of the American people? They're thinking, I want to get that spot. So like this. Anyway, there's no need to go too much into that. It's just obvious to see that politicians are simply cheaters. And actually this whole democracy, this system of democracy, although people don't like monarchy, monarchy is extinct all over the world, but democracy just fosters cheating and lying, and it fosters acting too. You have to act as if I care for the people, but you know you're only going to be there for a few years. So it's more about, modern politics is more about making a show of pretending to care for the people than actually caring for them. Whereas the kings previously, they were trained on the basis of Vedic knowledge, that
And one thing that you should understand, you have to take 1/6 of the karma of everybody, so you better rule them pretty well. Otherwise, if they do good karma, then it's good for you, and if they do bad things, you're in a lot of trouble. So they don't have this knowledge, you see. Mahatma Gandhi, he could have stopped calculating. They supposed, after India was divided into Hindustan, actually not Hindustan, they didn't want that one, because they thought we were secular, into India and Pakistan, and they said, well, the Muslims, they have their country, so they're doing what they like there. So here it would be supposed Mahatma Gandhi, Ahimsa, he's promoting. Then we should have in India no cow slaughter. But the great proponent of Ahimsa said that no, because the Muslims are here also, we have to respect their religion. So Mahatma Gandhi Ki Jai, by the grace of he, because he was so influential, that India is a nation of cow slaughter. And now it's come to the point where they're aiming to be the number one beef exporter in the world. This is their latest economic goal. There's so many modern mechanized slaughterhouses and so many things. So this is leadership in the mode of ignorance. They don't know they do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. And therefore, they generally do what is not supposed to be done, because they have no absolute standard of knowledge. They're not based in Vedic knowledge, which explains what is the purpose of life, what is sin, what is pap, what is punya. Actually, they have the word sin in English, but they don't really have any word for punya. They know what they have a word for sin, pap. Pap we have, and punya. But what is punya? There's no real single word in English. It's a pious activity. But it means more. Anyway.
Holy. Holy, pious, holy.
No. It's not exactly the same. Anyway, they have no idea, and therefore they moralize.
Wood bundle.
Huh?
Wood. You need to say wood kind of bundle.
So they moralize on the platform of humanism. That what is good for human beings. So just like this abortion question comes up, which is grossly sinful. Even Christians can understand that, and they don't have any, they don't have any advanced philosophy. But the humanitarian argument is that, well, a person, in this case the pregnant woman, should be allowed to, she has a right over her own body. She should be allowed to do with her body as she likes. But actually that isn't, according to Vedic knowledge, you don't have a right to do as you like. Everyone is responsible to others. Everyone has duties and responsibilities. In modern society, they emphasize rights, the rights of the individual, but they never emphasize the duty of the individual. In Vedic culture, rights are not much emphasized. What is your duty? You have a duty to perform. Arjuna was thinking that I have a right to leave this battlefield. But Krishna told him, no, you have a duty to fight. Karmanyevadhikarasti. You have a right, or you have to perform your duty, not to avoid your duty. Your right is actually your duty. Your right is to perform your duty, not to avoid your duty. In the name of rights, people are avoiding duty. You say, I have the right to do as I like. No, you have a duty to do this, 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 and this. So, the king or the leader has to implement that in society. So the whole culture is there, that people are trained, that you have a duty to perform. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras, they all have different duties according to their... The caste is the name. Of course, that word caste has got various bad connotations on it. But according to one's varna, one has particular duties. There's also Sri Dharma. The general Sri Dharma is to assist their husbands, whether Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Shudras, in the performance of their duty. And then over and above all, everyone has the spiritual duty to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, the duty of the king, he has his duty also, to see that others are performing their duty. But nowadays, leadership means how to try to arrange within human society that everyone can have as much sense gratification as possible without disturbing others too much. But this naturally leads to this idea that everyone should have the opportunity to perform sense gratification. But this leads to exploitation. This leads to dissatisfaction. Everyone is competing with everyone else. And therefore, we have advertisements in the streets. Give up guns and drugs. But they won't give up. You think that the person who is running a drug cartel and is running it with his mafia, he sees the sign, oh yes, okay, all right. And there's an advertisement. Something like that says, stop using the drug gun. I saw it. It must be around. Stop using guns and drugs. So you think the person says, oh, okay, all right, good idea, I'll stop using guns and drugs. And it's a waste of the paper to even print such a thing, waste of money. It's not going to make the slightest bit of difference using that. So what is needed actually is a complete restructuring of society so that people won't want to use guns and drugs. Why do people take drugs? Why do people take alcohol? Why do they, you see we're in that area, so there's sex shops there. Sex is there, that's part of life, but so much emphasis and perverted in so many ways. Why? Because people are dissatisfied. Therefore, they're trying to get satisfaction in so many artificial ways. So the ruler, his job is to regulate human society in such a way that everyone can be satisfied. And everyone can be satisfied as much as they give up this idea of exploitation, personal satisfaction. Actual satisfaction comes from working for the benefit of others. So in the Varnashram system is a system of cooperation in which one's own desires are satisfied, but one also has to act for the benefit of others. Not that one is working just for himself, maybe for myself, my own family. You see, society came to the point where people were just working for their own family. But now that's also gone. Just me, me, and me. It's not me, my wife, and my children. Now it is just me, me, and me. That's all. And maybe my dog, my best friend. So they get so upset. You see. Some dog is mistreated. They become so upset. They're killing millions of cows. And if someone slaps a dog in the street, they'll all become very upset. Very strange. People do not know what is the secret of life. Completely, this word Prabhupada has used, misdirected civilization. Completely, absolutely, the whole direction, completely wrong. Due to a basic philosophical mistake, they have no idea how to live in human society. And even our devotees, because we're not trained in this Vedic culture, because we're setting up our Krishna conscious movement, but at the same time, although we're trying to set up this movement with our own Vaishnava principles, at the same time, we're also living within the broader society, which has got its rules, such as you must send your children to school and have them educated in Darwin's theory and the whole culture of not only Darwin's theory, but the whole culture of school, they teach you the whole culture of live for yourself, get educational qualifications and then earn money. And that's the whole purpose of life. It's not directly taught. They don't give a class in the school. They don't give a class that the purpose of life is to enjoy your senses. They don't directly teach that. They probably never even thought about it directly that much. But it's there inherent in the education. So we're living in this society and we're brought up in this society. So these are some of the difficulties in spreading or even practicing Krishna consciousness. We're trying to practice Krishna consciousness within a broader atmosphere which is totally antithetical to everything that we're doing. At least our devotees, we should try to understand and implement what are the Vedic standards. Otherwise, we'll have the same problems as the karmis who we're trying to preach to. We'll have the same problems as them. And just the obvious example of that in our movement is rampant divorce, which is not at all part of Vedic culture. It's very much part of the modern materialistic culture. But because we haven't embraced the principles of Vedic culture, or probably we don't have any idea what they are or how to live them, therefore, that's the gross example of how our society is influenced by the morals or the ethics of the broader society. This whole concept in Vedic culture that one has to live and perform duty for others, that even we may come to Krishna consciousness, but if we don't imbibe that culture, then even in Krishna consciousness, we may be thinking just about myself, how I can become advanced and how I can live happily in Krishna consciousness. In materialistic consciousness, we think how I can enjoy myself. And it doesn't matter about others. I'll earn money and I'll live and enjoy myself. So with this attitude, if we come to Krishna consciousness, if we don't change our attitude, then we'll only be thinking, instead of thinking how we can cooperate with others, how can I perform my duty within the society, we'll be thinking just about myself, how I can live comfortably and do my bhakti, and how I will advance myself. But actually, with that attitude, we can't properly advance. And this kind of attitude leads to a sahajya mentality, where we think, oh yes, now I will become so advanced, I will come up to Krishna praying, I will enjoy with the gopis. But what is our duty? Our duty is to serve our acharyas. Our duty is to serve our acharyas. That may sound very nebulous, the acharyas, that may be very vague, the concept of serving our acharyas. But serving the acharyas means that we have to serve their present-day representatives also. Just like here we see that Lord Vishnu is upholding the position of King Indra, even though he's made a mistake, he's upholding his position. We see that Prabhupada did this with his leaders also. He supported them. I said there's a basic principle of business administration. You have to support your subordinate leaders. Otherwise, they can't do their job of guiding and directing if they're not allowed to guide and direct. And even if they make some mistakes sometimes, which it's understood, maybe made even by King Indra, but still, they have the duty and the responsibility and the knowledge and the empowerment which others don't have to lead, to manage, to rule. Many times we've seen in ISKCON that there's some revolution and they throw out the temple president. There were problems, but then afterwards there are no problems because there's nothing left. The person who's running this, he's the town president, he may be a little extreme or this and that, and people become upset. But at least he's running the show on, and then they remove him, and then they have a committee. which means it's completely useless. Nothing happens by committees. I mean, you don't run a temple by committees. Yeah. Someone dropped the spoon on the floor. Who will pick it up? Okay, refer it to the committee. There are some extra pots to be washed. Who will wash them? Refer it to the committee. The next meeting is next week, if everyone comes. Otherwise, we'll defer it to the week after that. Committees may have their use, but you need someone to take charge. And take charge, I mean, especially in the modern age, really, the ideas of freedom, my rights. No one wants to be told what to do. And there are so many rules. There are laws which restrict leadership. And you can't just, there are so many rules that you have to employ. You may want to employ, say you may want to employ 10 people in your factory, but I don't know in England, probably in England too, you'll have to employ, for instance, different people from different races and a certain number of women. It may be that you find there are 10 white males who, but according to the job description, they're the best for the job, but you're not allowed to employ them because there may be 15 people come for the job, and it just happens that the 10 white males happen to be the best qualified. But you can't employ them because, according to the law, you have to employ someone who's not white and not male. They may be completely sloppy and useless at the job, but you have to employ them because that's the law. So, and there are so many laws which inhibit one's ability to lead, to make decisions. So it's very difficult to be a leader in the modern age because people don't want to follow. In these countries especially, there's no respect for leadership, for authority. Respect means that, you know, if you're getting paid, so if you want to keep your job, you have to respect the leaders. But then even they have trade unions, and then you can, just like that, you don't work, you don't do the job, and they can't remove you either. And it's very much like that in India. In the government job, once you get a government job, you come in late every day, and when you come in, you simply go to sleep, and you're in a government job, you can't be removed. That's the system. That's why people like to get government jobs. So it's very difficult to lead in a situation where there are laws and systems which obstruct the leadership. Because everyone is, in the name of rights, everyone is taking advantage of rights and actually not performing their duty. So, within our Krishna conscious movement, of course, we've also had a lot of problems with leadership. And I've been saying, if you just remove the leaders and chase them out, or if you know no one has any respect in any leaders, then everything just collapses and there is no movement. So here we see that Lord Vishnu is supporting the position of Indra despite Indra's clear faults. And he's asking Pitu Maharaj, you just forgive and you go on in your position of being subordinate to Indra. Don't try to take his position. He's got his position. I give that position. So support that for the sake of maintaining the cosmic order. Nothing's going to be perfect in this material world. But at least if there is some system for executing our duties, either cosmic duties, overseeing different roles in the universe, or even our spiritual duties, there has to be some leadership. Someone has to take charge. Someone has to say, pick up this, you pick up this spoon. And then who's told to pick up this spoon? They should pick it up. They shouldn't say, well, it's not my duty. I have a right. I've already done 6 hours service. I'm told to do 6 hours service. So it's just like you're doing 6 hours service, maybe washing the pots, that's your service. And now there are just 3 pots to wash and then 6 hours finished. Okay, finished. I'm not doing any more. This is work to rule. But no, actually one should perform one's duty, understanding that you come to serve Krishna, and you have to do that within the system. Vedic society, unlike modern society in which they have a sham of democracy, which is supposed to be egalitarianism. But Vedic culture doesn't promote egalitarianism. Vedic culture is very structured, that there are people in the Brahmanas as always superiors to Kshatriyas. Manu, who is a Kshatriya, he wrote Manu Samhita. He wrote that even a 90-year-old Kshatriya must bow down to a 9-year-old Brahmana. So age, that is to be respected. But here, the Brahmana, he's in a higher social position due to his supposed to be better spiritual position. So that is to be respected. King is always to be respected. Of course, in Europe, they adopted a policy of killing kings. So that killed the kingly culture of Rome. Although it could be said that they deserved it. That was considered a great sin. Actually, in England they killed Charles II, the exile. So that was considered very, very sinful, actually. People thought it's worse than, even in the Christian culture, they thought it's more sinful than killing other people, because see, the king is a representative of God. And that actually is there in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Narayanam Chandaradipam. Among men, I am the king. The king is the representative of the of me. And even we find that this Nawab Hussein Shah, who was a rascal, actually. He was the king of Bengal when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there. He was a very oppressive ruler. And Sanatana Goswami happened to be his prime minister, because he got out of the job. But Sanatana Goswami was absconding from doing his service on the plea of sickness. And actually he had employed some, not employed, you know, employed Brahmins, but engaged Brahmins to recite Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was listening to them on the plea of illness. He was neglecting his duty of governing on behalf of the king, of course, because he wanted to go to a higher duty of serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when the king ended the assembly, where all the Brahmanas stood up, even though Brahmanas are to be respected by Kshatriyas, and he wasn't even a Kshatriya, he was just a Rakshasata. But they all stood up to respect him, understanding that even though he is a miscreant, tyrant, that he has got this position is by the grace of the Supreme Lord. He represents the Supreme Lord. Even such a king. So such a culture is there. So also in our movement, Prabhupada, he let this be known very clearly that he very much wanted that his GBC members would be respected. He would chastise them sometimes very strongly. But he didn't want that those who are in a junior position should make open revolt and all these kinds of things. Although that's GBC members also, they have to be open to listen to what others say. That's also them. But the general system is that you have to uphold GBC, temple president, sannyasis, all this should be respected. Otherwise, it just becomes a complete chaos. If leaders mislead, it becomes one kind of chaos. And if there are no leaders, there's also chaos. But of the two, we have to have some kind of leadership. And actually, Oh, there were more serious problems in the past. Now, we don't have so much, we don't have the same kind of problems with leadership that we had previously. Now we have more problems from lack of leadership. That we don't have the culture so much of leadership as there used to be. Which, even though we may say, well, leaders in the past, they were very, they were overbearing and care enough about the devotees. But one thing is that there were devotees, whether they cared about them or not, but they were making devotees. And there were so many books distributed and so many things. So at least something was going on. Whereas if there's no leadership, and then there's no devotees, and there's no nothing, there's no Krishna conscious movement. So even though we criticize, and rightly, the previous era in ISKCON, which there was disturbance from leaders, but at least they were leading them. They were doing many of the things that Prabhupada wanted, which is opening temples, making devotees, distributing so many books, so many things. So these are some thoughts occasioned by the study of how Lord Vishnu is correcting King Indra, but in a manner by which his authority is not compromised, so that he can go on ruling. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this? Yeah, please.
I understand completely that. And the subordinate should be humble to his authority and everything. But I was just wondering, in what part of the Bhagavad Gita it says that...
Krishna says.
That it talks about Grandfather Bhishma and Drona and Charya, mm-hmm. and how they took shelter of Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana. And because of this, they lost their respectability as leaders. So it seems mm-hmm. in one sense that's just a mistake. That was a mistake on their behalf.
It was a mistake, but it was serious enough to mean that they lost the position of being absolutely respectable. They were still respected. We see that before the fight, Yudhishthira came up to all the big leaders of the Kaurava side and very respectfully asked them, please give me your blessings so that I can fight against you. So they were respected, but they had to be fought against. That comes up in Mahabharata also, that Bhishma himself fought with Parashuram, his guru. He defied his guru. So that statement comes, Guru api avaliptasya kaya kaya majanataha utpanna pratipanna sya parityago vidhiyate. Even if one is a guru, he is to be rejected if he is fallen from his position, if he doesn't know how to instruct properly, if he's engaged in sense gratification, if he's incapable, all these different things. So, of course, that's a very extreme step. And that's generally not to be done immediately, but Arjuna may have considered also that, well, maybe I should fight. He said, I'm bewildered, I don't know, should I fight or not fight? He said, what was that? Karpanyadosha Shastra. Aratasvabhava, Pichara. From Dharma Samudha Chitta. Dharma Samudha. I'm bewildered about what is my duty. He wasn't sure, should I fight or should I not fight? Because Bhishma, Drona, Ashvatthama, they were all guru category. So he wanted to respect them, at the same time he understood they were supporting the wrong party. So he was bewildered what to do and what not to do. Because they were arguing. There were conceivably arguments on both sides of the case. And Krishna told him, in this case, you should do like this. That's why a guru is needed, because oftentimes we don't, in practical life, we don't know, should we do like this or should we do like that? Even according to the rules of Dharma, there are one line of action may be supported And another line of action may also be supported. So which exactly to choose? The basic principle is anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya vajana. To accept that which is favorable for our cultivation of Krishna consciousness and to reject that which is not. But exactly which, what will be favorable and what will not be favorable, sometimes it's difficult for us to tell. And even gurus are in a difficult situation in the modern age, because many times they don't want to instruct their disciples, because so many times it happens that then afterwards the disciple blames them. So they say, okay, you can do like this or you can do like that. I recommend you do like this. But if the guru is properly situated and he gives an instruction, then even if it appears that you may have so many difficulties due to that, one should still follow that, because one gets the mercy of Krishna by doing so. One gets spiritual strength from doing so. The order of the guru may put one into many difficulties, but those difficulties, they may be difficulties are generally the means by which we can advance in Krishna consciousness. Just like this, you see this divorce. Why do people divorce? Because it means too difficult to stay married. So many difficulties, so people, and difficulties are finished. But then you cause so many difficulties for others, and you cause difficulties for yourself by making bad karma, and it causes disruption in the whole of society, by which nowadays it's considered completely normal. And then no one has any commitment, because they're thinking, well, I'm married, but you know, how long? We'll try it out. And if it doesn't work, then there are plenty of other people in the world that can find someone else. So it's a difficult age. But that it is difficult doesn't mean that we should shirk our responsibilities. That others are irresponsible doesn't mean that we should be irresponsible. This is a very basic principle of civilization, responsibility, duty. But these words, the way it's going in one or two generations, it'll be in the dictionary, archaic. You know, sometimes they give words in the dictionary, they say archaic, it means it's a word that's no longer in currency, it's no longer used. It used to be used, but it's no longer used.
Regarding this animal sacrifice, horse sacrifice, some scientists trying to go to different planets like Moon, Saturn, in future they might make this statement that, okay, let's do this horse sacrifice, we don't want to become any god.
Well, Prabhupada already wrote the book Easy Journey to Other Planets. So the horse sacrifice won't work in this age. If you want to go to the heavenly planets, chant Hare Krishna. That's the only way you can go in this age. We don't recommend going to the heavenly planets. Why? If you're being tortured, maybe there are different kinds of torture, just like being hung from hung from a chain, and then they just leave you there for hours. That's one kind of torture. So if they offer that, well, you can. We're going to offer you some wonderful facility. You've been tortured every day for so many months. You've been tortured by being hung in iron chains. From tomorrow, we're going to hang you in golden chains. That's what going to the heavenly planets is all about. It's still suffering, but in a more high class way. That's all. So why even consider going to the heavenly planets? Go to Krishna. That's all. But if you desire, just like if the Krishna comes to this material world to take us back to the spiritual world. So if we get his grace, just that Prabhupada gave the example, is just like the king may come to a prison. And if he says, release this man, he can be immediately released. So the prisoner, if he sees the king has come, he can ask, please, get me released. And instead he says, please transfer me to the golden chain cell. You may do so. This guy's a fool. I can not only release him completely, I can make him a great king. I can give him half my kingdom if I so desire. And he sent